two words that I'll share first that are powerful, and the words how and the words yet. Anytime you think you cannot do something, just play out that phrase, you know, like instead of saying, you know, can I go buy this property? Can I go start this business? Instead of that, say, how can I go start this business? And psychologically and for goal setting, that matters. It matters more than I ever thought it would.
Hey, what's up? Welcome back to another awesome episode of Life in a Show podcast. I'm your host, Jason Wojo. On the podcast, we help people work less, make more, and live awesome lives. I'm joined by Polish Peter, my co-host.
So today we're going to be talking about some golden handcuffs. So we're going to be talking about some transitions. We're going to be talking about some business growing opportunities. And we have a great guest that actually walked the walk and talked the talk and what thing. And that's the best kind of a guest that we can have on here.
Dude, this is I love this episode. We have Spencer Hillegas on the show, and he's super smart, younger guy, early 40s. Here he was working in the Silicon Valley, tech startups, all kinds of cool things. Yet he realized very quickly that this was not the path for freedom in his life, both in terms of his finances and his time and prioritizing the things that are most important to him. So we're going to kind of get into like, how did he make that jump from a career in, you know, with the golden handcuffs, like Peter mentioned, into creating something for his family that served him rather than sacrifice his life. And listen, if you're listening right now and you're like, well, I don't have a high income job like Spencer, I still want you to tune in because he talks about, I asked him a specific question, like, what do you do when you don't have capital, when you don't have, you know, a high paying job? How can you still create freedom for your life, for your family, for your loved ones? And so we get into that as well, man. Lots of nuggets in here.
Yeah. And he also talked about setting goals. I think there's some good nuggets that he dropped about. And when it comes to setting goals, creating that the day for yourself, he talked about something called calendar. And towards the end of the episode, I had to say it, Wojo asked him a question that was pretty good, man. But he brought up two words that I want you to listen to.
Two words.
That will probably have a really good impact for you to create that goal.
And
yep, to moving forward.
Yeah. So listen to the whole interview. You're going to love it. Here's our interview. Here's our discussion with Spencer Hillegas. Spencer, what's up, man? Welcome to Life in Our Show.
Jason, Peter, honored to be here. Thank you so much for having me.
Dude, I love your story. You know, we had a chance to catch up not too long ago. It feels like a little bit. But you had such a powerful story that I knew our listeners and our viewers would benefit from, because I think it's one that many people have. And in particular, like, I want to start off with kind of like this, what I can kind of consider like the golden handcuffs experience, where you have a good paying job, providing you with financial security, making the money you want, but like life, like something's missing, like something feels off. Like, tell us about that. And then let's talk about how you started to achieve and pursue financial freedom and how life looks so different now than it did before.
Yeah. And thanks again, you know, for having me on. I felt like we were really able to connect in our last conversation, Jason. So I think, I spent 13 years in Silicon Valley tech companies. You know, as a kid who grew up playing in bands and, you know, thinking I was pretty punk rock, I never planned on going and starting a management career, leadership career. But five tech companies later, you know, my wife Jennifer and I, who is now the COO and co-founder of both our family and our business, she and I have been working full time, you know, for 13 years up until about 2019. And we both were sitting there making great income, Bay Area, California, and worked our butts off, you know, to climb corporate ladder, get promoted. You know, I was building big teams and companies like Intuit, you know, QuickBooks, TurboTax, you know, most folks know those names. And ultimately, once we got to this certain stage, we were like dumping money into our 401ks, making great W-2 income. We somehow managed to buy a house in the Bay Area years ago, and we felt like we did it, right? And ultimately, we were grinding. And I remember like a distinct moment. This is, I think it started around 2018. And I was working for the most intense startup that you can imagine, you know, culturally. I was putting 80 hours a week in. And you know, there's kind of this unwritten Silicon Valley lottery narrative that a lot of people know about. You know, you want to join a startup, maybe get a chunk of equity, be part of the next Google, Uber, you know, Facebook, what some big exit that somehow absolves all your financial sins along the way. And in the end, that was wasn't panning out, and we felt like the more we climbed, the more we made, but also the less time we had for our kids. And so there was a period of time, 2 weeks or so, I didn't see our youngest for like 2 weeks because I was going in so early, I was coming home so late, and it really was like the catalyst, you know, the spark where it was like, so, you know, so, something's got to give. And that's when I started really getting the bug to think differently and researching. And, you know, ultimately there's so many different wonderful directions we could take it from there, but we started to look at investing differently, not just dumping money in 401ks, not just maxing out our W-2 income. We wanted to put our capital to work because we had saved up well, you know? And so we started to invest passively in a bunch of different ways.
So hold on though. I want to back up for a second, man. What was that like not seeing your kid for 2 weeks? Like how, like what, what was that like? And I'm sure difficult certainly is not a word that can even describe that.
Depends which kid, right?
Yeah, right. Yeah.
I mean, you're not wrong on that one, depending on the week, right? but you know, but this is when one of them was very young, you know, and in those, that time is so fleeting, you know, any parent can knows that very keenly. And when you feel like, hey, you're going in, you know, putting the time in, putting your best work in, the sweat equity, and then you're not able to actually reap the benefits of that by connecting with the, you know, the family that you're growing, that's brutal. It's brutal and it's taxing, and the grinding feels like you're kind of on an endless treadmill, you know, call it a rat race, as we all know, but it was brutal. And I know clearly in the bigger context of the world, that might sound lofty as a real challenge for some folks, but for me at that moment, that felt really hard. And I think hard on Jennifer as well, right? I mean, we both were working hard and you know, sustaining our family, et cetera. And so just wondering, where's the off ramp? You know, like where's the off ramp from this lifestyle? Where's the priority where my health was not getting any focus? I mean, Jennifer's the same at the time. You know, how do you go and say, well, we're going to go do this for the next 20, 30 years this way? You can't, you know, it's not sustainable. How do I show up as a father, you know, be present and excited to see them when I do come out of that 2 week window, if I'm not feeling healthy and present and well slept and all that stuff? So it was hard, Jason, to say the least.
Well, man, and I'm wondering, did you tell yourself, or like, hey, man, you know, because I'm wondering, like, the reason I'm asking this is I think a lot of people are stuck on a similar experience or on that similar ride, but they keep telling themselves, like, oh, it's just a season. It's just a season. It's going to let up. It's going to get easier. Like, I just got to stick it out. But you, it sounds like you had a, and I don't want to say an early realization because you were in there for a while.
Yeah.
But at some point, and I'm guessing that the whole 13 years weren't like that. And it probably had, you know, and so, but finally you reached this breaking point. And so what did that look like for you guys? So how did you guys, and by the way, Silicon Valley, I mean, most people would be like, oh my gosh, this is a dream job. And this is my like career goal aspirations. And yet you guys are recognizing like, this isn't what we want. Like that had to be kind of like a little bit of a tug of war, like, gosh, like what is going on here? Maybe even like disorienting. Like I remember when I had a job for the contracting for the Navy and spent 15 years in school to get that job. And all of a sudden I realized this isn't what I want. Like it can be very jarring. Mm-hmm. And so how did you guys actually navigate that decision? And now with a family, like that could be scary.
Oh gosh. I love that question, Jason. And thanks for sharing that about the Navy path as well. It's, you know, for me, when I was going through that headspace, that challenging headspace, I sat there and you hit that point of, just to say it bluntly, I mean, you hit that point of desperation, right? Of like the quiet desperation. And I think that's a different way I'm hearing what you're describing, because so many people out there are going through that now, absolutely going through that right now. And I think for me, just what it came down to at that moment, I'm grateful for this, as ironic as it sounds, but the tech industry is pretty ruthless when it comes to age, you know, and people can't see, you know, I'm 41 now, you know, I'm not saying I'm really long in the tooth or anything, but that makes me relatively ancient when it comes to some tech companies, some early stage tech cultures. And
wow, okay.
I don't think this is taboo to say anymore these days. Maybe it was about 10 years ago, but when you start seeing that and you start hearing that and picking up those vibes, as it were, in companies, and you're sitting there going, well, where does this end? Like, where does this end in 10 years, 20 years? Because the work culture is not built for people with kids. There was a time where I was the second oldest person in a company. I was at that time, I think like 34, maybe 35. You know, so those tea leaves that I was attempting to read at that moment were absolutely part of it, because in the big picture, I really think there's two big, there's a push and a pull for every major decision in life. You know, one of my former mentors mm-hmm. kind of helped me understand this construct, right? Something is pushing you away. You know, it's not pleasant to deal with. And that's what I was feeling in that moment. Like, this career is great, but either I keep going up this ladder, I keep pushing up more and more responsibility, less time, more friction, or perhaps I look at a different path. I don't know what that path is. And I had to figure out what that pull is. I knew what the push was. I didn't want to be aged out. I didn't want to be grinding. And I needed a way to get more family focus, more health focus, and more time. And for more of a financial moat around my family, because God forbid something happened to me, you know, it's a crazy world out there. And I, you know, the income for our family was top of mind as well. So that was really the headspace I was in, Jason. And I really appreciate you asking about it, because in the end, the writing was on the wall very plainly for me at that point. And I was fortunate enough after, on my fifth company that I was working with, a mentor led me into this one place that I was brought in to turn around a team, hire a bunch of folks on a loan origination group, you know, that we were helping fix and flippers get loans for these homes. And I watched a couple of these guys, younger guys than me, that I managed, they reported to me. And they would work amazingly hard, great, great team members, right? And they would put time in after everyone went home. It's like 5 o'clock. And they stuck around. They stuck around like 2 hours, sometimes 3 hours, until it got dark at night. And I was like, what are they working on in that room over there? You know, it was a cool culture. And in the end, I bring this up because I found out, and they told me about it eventually, that they were building their own business. And when you see people that you relate to day to day, you know, when you actually talk to people and you're like, I know this person, I know what their strengths are, I know what they're working on, I know how they think enough because they've shared it with me. It makes it so much more tangible as a, hey, can I do this? You go from that headspace of, can I go do this thing, to how can I go do this thing? And that was a big eye opener for me, is like just literally seeing people that I knew firsthand, interacted with daily and deeply respected, that I technically managed, but you know, I just try to serve as a servant leader, and seeing them pull that off and go off and build a company was like, wow, okay, there's a different way to go do stuff.
Yeah, man.
So listen, so I love what you're sharing so far, because one of the things that you've shared, like what I'm hearing, is like there's golden handcuffs, been in it for a very long time. Now I'm having these realizations, right, of when I'm seeing what's possible. And, you know, there is this, first you mentioned earlier, like I need that off ramp. So my question to you is, how you get off that ride? Because it probably is kind of scary in that moment, because I think a lot of people deal with that, right? So I'm curious for you, like, how you get off that ride? What's the next step? What'd you do?
Yeah, my goodness. Getting off the ride. I wish I could say it was like a clear-cut blueprint. Here's every step that I took along the way, right? Hindsight, it seems so clear. But, you know, at the time, it felt like hacking through decisions with a figurative machete and just trying to find your way. So at that time, we had saved up some capital, because we were working hard. And we had also been fortunate to buy a home early. So we had some home equity we could tap when interest rates were more favorable. So we had some resources, right? And but at first, at least I knew from mentors basically were like, don't go do anything stupid. Go get some education baseline. Go read. Go talk to people. Get out there and network. And I was fortunate to be working in the guts of a real estate-focused lender, right? And so I could see something like the numbers and the economics, the financials behind some of these transactions that were happening inside of this company. And I was like, as a guy who's serving these real estate investors on the other side, I was like, how do I get involved? Because I see how many zeros these folks are making, but I can't swing a hammer. Like, I'm not handy. I rely on YouTube every day, Peter. Like, I have to go and figure out. And,
there's no shame in that, dude. It's all good.
And Jennifer, I'm very at ease with this. I mean, Jennifer is way handier than me. So I'm like, I can't go flip a house, but I want to go figure out how do we start investing and somehow get into real assets, you know, and invest in stuff that produces cash flow. Because, you know, index funds, you know, stock portfolio, we had that going. So what do? Like, I read 24 books in an 18-month period. I listen to 400 podcasts. So, you know, great education, much like the stuff that you guys do on your show here. I didn't need to do that much. That's procrastination after a while, right? But I eventually went out with Jennifer. We drove around a whole summer just to find one rental with our kid in the car. And we bought a very overpriced duplex here in California. Only property we've ever purchased for real estate investing purposes in California. But that was a good learning experience, you know, paying 430 grand for a duplex and getting $200 a month in cash flow. That we call that phase one. Phase two, we got comfortable buying some rentals long distance. We did that in the Midwest. We got up to five properties, five single family rental properties in the Midwest. And doing this full time, I'm doing this while I was working full time leading teams. So I was getting up at 4 a.m. just to go do the job before the job is how I thought about it in my mind. And I think once I locked into those goals, and Jennifer and I had set these goals together as to where do we want to be? Where do we want to be in 5 years, 7 years, 15 years, you know? It made it much clearer, like, hey, the 9-to-5 job, going in and working hard, getting W-2 income is good. If we want to make a change, if we want that off-ramp, we want to build this thing, I have to do some Herculean big effort in a different way than I've ever done it. And I don't know what headspace I was in at that point to pull it off, but, you know, you get up and you work in a way you never have before. So I was doing, you know, 2-hour work blocks before work every day and going in and leading teams. And then ultimately, we've got to the point where we started investing a little differently and even got more active and built a business around something. We never planned on building a business in the first place, but it started out as a passive investor, buying rentals, buying them locally, buying them long distance, and then ultimately building a business around that. There was a lot of stuff that happened in between, but that was the whirlwind version of learn, overeducate, and then start taking action. And then ultimately just working my butt off to go and educate myself by talking to other people and getting into an industry that I understood some of, but not much. And so I really had to get into it.
So how has your business evolved since then, man? Since you started off, you know, the local, you went to the Midwest for the remote stuff. Like, what do you guys focus on now?
Yeah, I think the wonderful learnings that we got, Jason, about investing in rentals is that they're really good for long-term wealth building, but they're not really good for being fully passive if you have a busy life. You know, even we have property managers on those properties that we own and on the rentals we own, and we found out they're semi-passive at best. You still get stuff you have to deal with. You still have to deal with, you know, tenant turnover and stuff. So what did we do? We started putting money into bigger deals and structuring partnerships where we're like, hey, we started investing 5- and 6-digit numbers of our capital into bigger deals and funds with other teams that have been doing this for years. Because I was like, I'm not going to move at this point. We have deep roots in this area. We're not moving to the markets where we want to buy property. And we know the economics are so good. You know, you can go find these amazing, like, cash flowing deals that can over time stack up to replace your income. But I'm not going to move to Texas at this point. I'm not going to move back to Colorado. We lived there for a decade. We're here now. So how do we do? What do we do? We find killer teams that have been doing this for many years. We vet them the same way we would for our own money, because we put our own money in with them. And we built a club where, like, we find those teams and we put together a group of our investors. And somehow people just started asking me, how do you go do what you do when you're vetting these folks? You know, and I'm like, well, I get on a plane and I fly out and I put them through this 5-part vetting framework. And that's what we do. And we decide if we're going to put our money into them. That became a business. And now hundreds of people ultimately trust us and invest alongside us in these types of deals for, you know, different types of real estate, you know, so, you know, self-storage facilities, apartment buildings, you know, like some private equity stuff, you know, like that is never in any way the master plan we started with, but it became something organically because people trusted us and wanted to lean on the expertise.
Man, I love that. I love the evolution of it. And so I have a question, man. So this is something that I got to tell you, it might be a difficult question for you because it's not your experience, but there are people who want to similarly get out of their job that do not really have a lot of capital yet, or, you know, and by the way, obviously hearing you speak, you know, you're highly intelligent, and some people feel like, hey, I'm not as smart as Spencer, and I can't do this, and I have all these obstacles in my way, and there's all these reasons they can't make it happen. Have you ever helped anybody like that? Or do you have any advice for someone on that path who, and again, like, this is kind of an unfair question to ask you because this wasn't your path, but I'm curious if you'd have any advice for the people that are in that situation, you know, trying to make their way towards freedom as well.
Yeah, I mean, I embrace the question, Jason. I really appreciate you asking it too, because I take those phone calls all the time. You know, from people in my personal network, you know, friends and friends of friends, and sometimes folks that just reach out and ask that question directly to me. I have very clear thoughts on this at this point, which is that, you know, within the world of investing in entrepreneurship, sometimes folks will say, oh man, you know, I don't like that W-2 job. I don't know, the corporate world. And I know we opened talking about like how hard it was for me in that specific period of time. But in the big picture, the first decade of that career, I do cherish the majority of that, you know? So I bring this up because if I could go back in time and talk to my younger self, and if someone is out there at the same position I was at, where like I had credit card debt when I was young, you know, I had too much fun, even though I made good income when in my early 20s, or if someone's in a place where they're starting with little to no capital, what I would still do is find a way to go generate active income in a way that you can do over a period of time. You know, just, and that could be a W-2 job. That could be starting an online business. That could be doing a side hustle. That could be so many things. But I still really believe that like if a person doesn't have a job that they can sustain and do over a period of time, it's still a good foothold. I mean, you got to start there. You also learn skills in that area, in that career, where you can actually go and transfer that. You know, so many of the things that we use in our business were skills we directly learned, both Jennifer and I, in our careers. You know, and those relationships that you build in a company, in any types of like sort of service business, any type of work you're doing, you build relationships with people. And over time, that does come back around positively when you have a pay it forward mindset and you try to add value to other people in the world. So that diatribe all basically means active income is a good start. I think beyond that, setting a long horizon goal. So Jennifer and I, we sat down and we said, okay, we want to change our lives over the course of X amount of time, right? Trying to figure out what that number was. Our starting circumstances were different, but I would do this the exact same way if I could go back in time and talk to myself when I had a bunch of credit card debt and no assets and no capital. I would say, I want to hit this goal or this amount of income within this many years. And the reason it matters is we set a 15-year goal initially, which sounds absurdly long to most people. But that's the ultimate excuse killer. You know, like when someone sets a goal, if you already set a goal, we say, I'm going to go and make $1 million in 6 months. I mean, that's pretty unreasonable for most people. If I say I'm going to go make, an income of, you know, $10,000 a month, and I'm going to give myself 10 years to go do it. Well, that sounds quite a bit more reasonable, and it changes the way that one goes out and starts taking action and setting goals. And so I know that might sound lofty for some folks, but frankly, that's the right starting point still. Like, I really believe that. So I think getting active income, setting a clear goal over a right time horizon that removes excuses, and then finding someone who can help you, like someone who's one step ahead of you on the journey, you know, like they don't have to be, you know, if you're sitting there with no capital and you're just wondering, how do I get help? I would strongly encourage folks to go out and seek out a coach or a mentor. I mean, I've absolutely used 4 different coaching programs, no, 5 over time. There's so many wonderful ones out there. Of course, do your due diligence, you know, but like, I think that investment is something has been worth it every single time. So, you know, once you get some stabilized income, you get some form of goal setting, and then you also find some sort of like guidance, but you have to seek out the guidance, make sure it's a good fit for those goals. Then you're going to have some choices ahead of you, but it does take, I don't want to make it sound like it's easy. It takes hustle, right? It takes hard work.
Hey, we'll get right back to the episode. Before we do, I want to tell you about an upcoming Get a Life Getaway that we have in Milwaukee, Wisconsin, October 1st through 3rd. Mark your calendars right now because this is an event you're going to want to be at. This is where Peter and I will personally walk you through the process of creating the proven process, I might add, the proven process of creating a life and a vision for the perfect life that you've always wanted. We've had over 10,000 people go through this event. We've been doing it for almost about, 15 years now. We've learned a thing or two about how to do this. We've learned about best practices and what things actually work and make this a reality versus what's out there that's fluff and what's out there that's just pie in the sky approach. That is not this. This is strategy. This is tactics. We're going to walk you through every component to making this reality. We're going to show you how to fit all of pieces of the puzzle together so that you can have the dream life you've always wanted. Again, October 1st through 3rd, Milwaukee, Wisconsin. There'll be a link in the show notes or go to lifenear.com right now. you'll see the list of upcoming events and you can register. Hope to see you there.
And on that topic of hustle and the period where you were kind of essentially like, I don't know if it's called moonlighting when you're up before your job and after, or if that's a different phrase, but this a period of like extra hustle. How do you avoid, because the other problem I see happen with people that do decide to go into business for themselves is they end up working just as much at their job because now the fear and the uncertainty of a new business and it's on me and that steady paycheck is gone and they just kind of like, they accelerate the amount of work they're doing. Like, how did you overcome that?
Let me get back to you on that one. All authenticity and integrity intact. I think it's been a journey. You know, it's been a journey. I think one thing I've noticed that I relate to with literally every single person who I've watched go from a high paying, high demand W-2 job. You know, a lot of which in tech companies that you and I would both recognize, right? You know, like whether it's Apple, Google, and then there's a lot of folks who have built amazing careers and they say, hey, let's go build a side hustle that does this or that or the other. They leave that job and they work like a maniac, absolute maniac. And they give it so much more effort, exactly what you said, Jason, so much more effort than you can imagine. And they ever gave to their core job at their company. And I can relate to that in the first year after I left and went full time. You know, and so in 5 months before COVID hit, this was like in, I think, October 2019, that's when I was like, hey, our business had reached the point where it was too much. Like I couldn't do both anymore. I couldn't show up well in my leadership job at my day job and do that with my integrity intact, knowing that I was still putting in that moonlighting, as you said, in the morning, in the afternoon, in the weekends, and lunch breaks, and et cetera. So I went out and I worked my butt off right after that. And over time, though, I think I have the strategic advantage, as I'd like to think of it, in that my co-founder is my wife. I don't think that's for everybody. And I'm not saying everyone should rush out and go do that. Working with your partner, your spouse, is something that is a deeply personal thing and completely depends on your own situation. It's not going to work for most people. But for me, that means every time that I sit there and I say, what's my trade-off? Do I take on this project or do we as a family go on that camping trip? I mean, that's been my experience. And I think if I really wanted to say, how do we flip life on its head more positively from a work focused, daily priority, to put it in kids first, you know, marriage relationship first, health first kind of lens, it's really binding our business and our family together in a way. But that has taken, you know, we've been doing this now for over 7 years. And so I think that has been a journey, and it's a lot of conversations, a lot of learning how to communicate together. Thankful for having the language of business from two separate careers, because I think that has helped us in a lot of ways for both Jennifer and I. But again, I wish that playbook was more helpful for folks who don't necessarily have the ambitions to go and work with your spouse. But at least for us, that has been challenging, but even more powerful on the positive, because it means that I have to rein it in when I say, oh, let's scale to the moon. No, how about we don't scale to the moon? How about we actually go build a life of meaning and intention?
I love that, man.
I love that, man. I love what you're sharing here, because one of the things that I'm hearing from you talking about it is that there is a why behind what you're doing. There is a, you know, like this idea, why am I doing this? Goes back to when I first started, you know, creating my own business, is, you know, the kids and family and those kinds of things wasn't. And for me, ultimately what ended up happening, I actually started working more in the business, and that why I was kind of going backwards kind of a thing, right?
Yeah.
And I think the priorities, and when it comes to your action, I think very important to show the fruits of that why, right?
Yes.
So I got a question for you, because someone who's sitting on here on this podcast is listening to this right now, and they are going from whether it's a corporate job or they have a W-2, whatever it might be, and now they want to get to being their own boss. They want to, you know, have that financial freedom. They want to be able to not have those handcuffs or whatever, transition. Through your story, everything that you went through, what would you say to that person as they're sitting here right now? What kind of advice would you give them?
Yeah, I would start with defining what you think, as corny as it sounds, like start with defining your ideal day. I mean, I can't get away from that. I've heard the term vision boarding. I never thought of it that way. But for me, it was a deeply powerful exercise to do that right off the bat, Peter. Like literally saying, okay, open up my Google Calendar, look at how my calendar looks today. Mm-hmm. Here's how my Google Calendar I want to look in 10 years from now. And people will say, well, how's that going to actually help me? It'll help you because that will drive a series of behaviors and decisions over time. And that is literally what I did. I said, okay, from two, where was I at? Well, I was waking up 4 a.m., taking a bus into the city to work hard. I was literally working end to end all day. I want my days to involve some focus on health. I want to take my kids to and from school. I want to be able to go and have a meaningful interaction or multiple meaningful actions with my wife, my spouse. I want to hopefully have some time for connection outside of that, meaning with friends, community, and ideally some form of philanthropic or charitable efforts that are mixed in there, right? And if those things are all part of my future state, I can inform the decisions and actions I take from, you know, from A to B. And in the end, that would be the first step, because it's easy to skip. It's tempting to skip, right, Peter? I mean, like, it's scary because you're sitting there going, I have to be held accountable to going toward this thing now. As soon as you put it down on paper, you're like, wait, I can't cop out. I can't make up an excuse for this anymore. So that, you know, that would be the first step. The second step, very specific, but I think people glaze over this. I literally pulled out a blank calendar when I was trying to say, how the heck am I going to find time to work on this thing? I had the goals and I was like, hey, block out all the time that's already spoken for, all the family stuff, all the work stuff, all the working hours. And I had found 10 hours at that time. And anyone should go out and just sit there and run that exercise, as dry as it sounds. You can't skip it. You just can't skip it. Like, find that available time. I sacrificed, of course, and other people have to do that too. I mean, these are quite mild sacrifices in the big context of the world, of course. I stopped, binging on Netflix. I stopped, I love playing guitar. I've been playing guitar for like 25 years. I stopped playing that for a good year to 2 years, you know, and all those hobbies, all those things, I didn't have a chance to go out and do happy hours, you know, like all those things where people think, oh, I have no time. I'm like, I guarantee that you have time. It's just about the trade-offs. It's about the opportunity costs. And ultimately, can I tolerate putting away an Xbox? I think ultimately one of the places of inspiration that I drew from early on was, you know, and this is, I'll keep this quick, but I grew up in an entrepreneur household. Mm-hmm. My dad was a real estate broker for 30 years, and that was really cool in some ways because I actually got pulled in to see what that was like. That was the one income family situation. He was pulling me in to do stuff as a teenager and as a kid. I was cleaning out houses that were going to go for sale, you know, cleaning out fridges. I was going doing open houses. And ultimately, I bring it up because I saw him wake up at 4:30 a.m. every day and thought, what a crazy guy. Like, why? I'm never going to do that. Who does that? That's silly. And here I am doing it, right? Mm. But what was also interesting at that period of time was I got to see what happens when things don't go well as an entrepreneur for a period of time. He was flying high. He was like in the top five real estate brokers in the country for back in the 90s. We had a good lifestyle as a family for a while. But then we hit this period of time in our family, we call it like the dark decade. And I lost my younger brother to cancer as a teenager. We lost like two grandparents right after that within like a matter of months. Anyways, I won't go too grim here for people, but I'll just say that that had a bunch of effects on my dad's business over time. It downscaled our lifestyle. So what I saw happen was our income, our one active income as a family, went way down, big scale down. And so I was sitting there going like, huh, this is really hard to see this happen. And so I take those principles and lessons now, and I bring it up in this answering to your question, Peter, because when it comes to actually going out and thinking, How do I draw on my energy? How do I draw on my past? How do I draw on my learnings of my upbringing or anyone else's upbringing that they have? I'm sure that they can find ways and reasons to go out and get the motivation to go do these things. But for me, that has been critical because in the end, I'm the dad now. Mm. I have young kids. I have people that rely on me. I know what happens if there's a single active income coming into a household and that income stops. So how do I build a financial moat around my family is the ultimate question that guided me when I was trying to get to those early stages of goal setting. And I think that is so important for people. If they sit there and think, a cup of coffee is not really getting me to the point where I can put together my ideal day, guys. And it's like, well, if your why is meaningful enough and you see what happens when things don't go well, and you've painted a clear picture of what you know can go well, you'll find a little bit more pep in your step than just a cup of coffee.
Man, dude, that's awesome. Like, and so I love, you know, you bring up the financial moat, and I know that was an early, that was one of the big influences among other things, but I also love that you've really done that successfully while also prioritizing your health, your marriage, your family life, your kids, you know, like, and so it's, you're proof that this can happen. Like, this actually can happen for people. And so, like, I just love that as an illustration, man. And I'm super happy for your success. You know, before we kind of wrap the episode, are there any kind of parting words or advice you'd have for someone who's listening to this now? And this could be from at any stage, whether they're in their business and they're working too much, whether they have a job like we talked about before, and they're thinking of making the jump and wondering if it's possible, whether they are, you know, living the life they want now and they have the freedom that they're pursuing. Like, are there any kind of gems you've learned along the way that you just feel have become your kind of your life mantras or your mottos that you've kind of structured your life around?
Yeah. Oh man, how much time do you have? I'll keep this quick. Two words that I'll share first that are powerful. And the words how and the words yet. This was so helpful to hear this from a mentor. It was that anytime you think you cannot do something, just play out that phrase, you know, like instead of saying, you know, can I go buy this property? Can I go start this business? Instead of that, say, how can I go start this business? And psychologically and for goal setting, that matters. It matters more than I ever thought it would. The word yet. You know, if there's something that you want to achieve, just tack the word yet on the end of it, you know, and make that a systematic habit. Put a sticky note on your computer, put it up around your house. You know, oh, I'm going to go, you know, help this number of people achieve financial freedom. I want to do it until this period of time. Oh, I haven't done it yet. You know, can I do it? Can I not do it? Oh, I can do it. I just haven't done it yet.
Dude, it's everything. That is gold right there. Like, I think that is a mic drop moment right there. And I think, like, I don't know if there's anything else like more powerful that I've heard recently on one of our interviews than those simple two words, man.
No, I really appreciate that. I mean, I can't take any credit for them. Obviously, there's much wiser people who are like helping me always click up to the simple stuff. You know, like I love overthinking. I'm a champion overthinker.
So you learned this from a Yoda. You have a Yoda in life, and like,
absolutely.
Don't think, yeah. Just do.
Yeah, exactly right. Yeah, man, we've been watching a lot of Star Wars. That's timely. yeah, but absolutely. Those words are quite powerful for me, and I hope they help other people.
Well, dude, I feel super honored to have you on the show and really appreciate you sharing and dropping these gems for us. Where do people find out more about what you're doing and what you're into?
Yeah, thank you again, Jason and Peter. I mean, this has been a pleasure. Really honored to be on here. So that you can find more about us at madisoninvesting.com. We've got some information on there, and folks can set up time to connect with me, and we can just nerd out on investing or just, you know, talk about entrepreneurship.
Love it. Thanks for your time, man.
Yeah, thanks, guys.
Man, I really enjoyed that interview, man. He's a super sharp guy. I love what he's accomplished. I love how he's prioritized his family and his health above work. And frankly, man, I can relate a lot to his journey of like going down a path for a long period of time and then making a switch and realizing it's not the right path. You know, like I mentioned in the episode where I had to step away from a long, long pedigree of education to get into real estate. And he kind of had something similar. Now, certainly he's a lot sharper than I am. So he has some advantages.
Well, he had five different companies that was involved at some point. You just
right,
went
man.
For five
he's
different degrees. So, I mean.
Yeah, man. So this is a cool episode. And I, you know, this is where there's a few nuggets that were some of my favorites. Like, you know, some of the first ones. And by the way, it's so uncanny sometimes to me when we speak with these people who really, in many cases, don't even know who Lifener is because mm-hmm. they're not in our niche. They overlap so much with our beliefs and what we teach and our philosophies. Like, it's just so cool. It's such a validation that, like, independently, you know, people are realizing these things to be crucially important to their success in achieving freedom.
Yeah. So, I mean, I love what he talked about writing those goals and writing the perfect day vision, like literally putting it down on paper. And I tell this to all of my students, put it down on paper. There's something, quote unquote, powerful that happens when you do that. So I love that he brought it up. I love the, you know, the two distinctions between the calendars that he talked about, you know. And the third thing about the calendar, where he actually went at the beginning when he was working, and he went and created the calendar to find what hours that he has that are left over. He found 10 hours in his life that he can start giving to this new business that he's building. And he had to be very authentic with himself, right, in being intentional that, you know what, maybe I can go hang out with the friends like that. You know, maybe I need to drop the Netflix binging or whatever it might be, because that's when the 10 hours I can find. And when you go, and those are the kind of a intentionality that needs to be super duper important during that particular time in order to, for you to get off that ramp, you know, to get on the off ramp. And he basically kind of created it himself. And I remember when I asked him, like, so I get off the ramp, because he was looking for one. He had to go create one. He had to build one. Because there isn't one in that kind of environment. So I love that he talked about that.
Well, one thing I want to talk about for a second, man, is like, so there was this period in his life when he was like, you know, he said he's up at 4 a.m, he's working before work, he's working after work. And some people are like, well, hold on a second. How is that? How is that life in air-ish? And how is that life in air-esque? And how is that living in freedom? Here's the hard truth I think people sometimes gloss over, is that when you're making any kind of transition like that, there is by necessity a period that is going to a season that's going to require a little bit of extra work to get past that. Now, here's the big distinction, though. That extra work was just that. It was a season with an end goal that was moving him towards freedom. And the difference between that and just a W-2 is like that W-2 is purely active income that is not furthering the needle in terms of helping you create a business that's going to be sustainable. And so, sustaining for your life. And so there's a difference there. And, you know, just like we have to, you know, be careful to monitor that, because we don't want it to turn into like the next job. Like we don't want our business to all of a sudden like become what our W-2 was, and we're working 60, 80 hours a week. That is kind of a transitional period that like early on, we talk about this, by the way, at the Business Builder Workshop, where like, you know, you got to go through that first stage of business development where you're kind of doing more than you want to, and you're learning, and you're getting proof of concept. And so you just got to buckle down for that, right? And just get through it as quickly as possible. Like you just got to, you know, you just got to get through it as quickly as possible, get through to the other side.
Yeah, but you, to his point of what you're saying here too, there's got to be intentionality there, and you got to have a plan to say that this is a season. I think a lot of people don't actually put the bookends on this kind of a thing to make sure that it's not a season. They're not being intentional, don't have a plan to, because what ends up happening.
Or vision.
Or vision, because what ends up happening is they get out of that, you know, working 80 hours for somebody else to get and working 80 hours for themselves. And they become their all new worst boss because, you know, that season never ends basically. So that season that we're talking about here should not be forever kind of a thing, right? So what's the plan that you need to set up? And I love how he brought it up, because the nuggets that he dropped in there were the things that helps you have the season be in a much smaller time than would normally help.
Right.
Yeah, you compress
and
it. Yeah.
You're compressing that time period. And I'm glad that he also, you know, I had to ask him the question about the people that don't have a lot of money. They don't have a lot of capital. And so like, what do those people do? And so I love that he addressed that. And then lastly, man, I just love that we finished the episode on a high note with these two words, how and yet. What a cool framework. And like two words to kind of give you some context to any situation or challenge you may have, like, right? Like, how do I do this instead of I can't do this? And, you know, maybe, you know, I don't have the skills to do this. I don't yet have the skills to do this, you know? And so those two words, incorporating those into like some of the things that we think, that we say, really could have a transformative effect.
Or I don't know how to grow hair yet.
Right.
Maybe someday, Bojo. Someday, buddy.
On that note, listen, we hope you guys enjoyed the episode. We hope you got something out of it. If you did, share this. let somebody else know about the podcast. Like, this is how we change lives around the world. You know, we are not limited to our local area anymore. And this podcast can reach literally anybody from any corner of the earth, which is, by the way, cool, man. This is cool. I don't know if you knew this. We have a significant amount of listeners, like I've seen in Australia, in the UK, and then actually South Africa. We have actually gotten listeners there too. I'm like, what? This is kind of, yeah, like it's kind of weird. I'm not seeing a lot in Poland though, man. Like, I was gonna say, have you been banned? Or like, are you on the blacklist there? Like, what's the deal there? Because we're not getting
maybe,
a lot of
or I'm actually the one that's detracting them from listening.
Right. Yeah. So that's yeah. I didn't want to say that. That's what I was kind of insinuating. But yeah. All right. Well, anyway, share the podcast. Let somebody else know about it. Hope you got something out of it. We will see you next week. Take care, everyone.